God has all power. God has all grace. God has all mercy. The Lord will inevitably teach mankind the ways of righteousness, the ways that are right, the ways that are correct. Part of the reason why we are going through what we're going through in our country and will yet go through further things than that is because people have chosen unrighteous ways, ungodly ways. But in the end, we as human beings learn that God's way is always the best way, and that God, who could have chosen any way and who thought them all through, chose not the ways of evil, chose not the ways of greed, chose not the ways of covetousness. And he hates those things because he sees where they all lead. And that is the reason why we have been like we have and are going into the state that we are going in. However, God still has the answers for all of that. You know, so many times we hear that Jesus is the answer that we become so accustomed to the whole thing that we think it's just a cliche. We forget that he is the answer. We forget that he's alive, he's real, he's here for us, he lives within our heart. He will arise in moments of crisis, and he will see us through them. Sometimes God sees us through in the crisis, and sometimes God defers the crisis for us. You see it happening around you, and it doesn't happen to you. The other day we were discussing the fact that suffering does come to Christians too. God doesn't always avoid all suffering, because suffering does marvelous things for humanity, and it makes us more noble. It makes us stronger. Suffering teaches us a lot more than good, easy times do, and it also makes us noble. It gives us a good character, and we become better people. People that don't suffer become very shallow. People who've never had anything go wrong with their life become very flippant, and it is very hard to get them to take anything serious because nothing has been really serious. But these people that have lived that way for many, many a year, let them contract cancer and let them know they've got 6 months to live, and suddenly all the flippant lightness of their heart and the cruise easy-go-lucky, like we've got all of eternity, suddenly comes to a shooting end. And they begin to think about things that are serious. They become more noble. They become more interested in things that have values that are eternal. And they don't care too much about things that happen on the earth. They are more likely to love and to make something out of family and relationships than they are to just throw caution into the wind and go off with some younger person, man or woman. And they're far more likely to raise their kids in godly fear and in good manners. Whereas the rest just let them go, do whatever they want to do. After all, they had all the freedoms in the world they needed when they were young. But see, all the people that had those freedoms to do the things that they were doing are leading our nation today. We have brilliant people, but with no judgment. It amazes me how people as intelligent as we've got today leading our nation, how little judgment they have, to realize that all we're doing is not fixing the problem, and we're just indebting the rest of our next 3 to 5 generations. We're terribly indebting them, many of whom are not yet born. We've taken most of their salaries of their lifetime with what's happening now. How can there be so little judgment? And I was asking the Lord, how is it that people that are so intelligent, they go to college, they learn all these things, they know the science of economy, they know all the ins and outs of everything, but have so poor judgment in using any of it? And the Lord told me that the free lifestyle of 30 years ago in the 60s, you'll remember that, of drugs and licentiousness and free sex and all the rest, has produced this type of people. Their judgment is gone. They're a human being. You look at them, they're intelligent, they're well-studied, they're in offices of great importance, and all the rest of us are depending on decisions made by people who have had the judgment in their minds and hearts completely obliterated by drugs and free lifestyle. And now these are the people governing our nation. But remember that God says that he turned them over to the desires of their own heart, but it brought leanness into their soul. Does God rule in the affairs of man? Absolutely. Sometimes the way God has of teaching us is to let us go and let it show us just where all this leads. But I hope some of us are beginning to understand as we look at all this thing and see the perilous problems that are approaching our land, that there is help. So first of all, I'd like to direct our attention to the fact that there is a lot of stuff happening that doesn't look very good on our horizon, and it doesn't look very good now, both politically and morally and economically or financially. It looks pretty grim out there. But I'd like to bring a word of hope to us today. And the Lord had given me this word of hope yesterday afternoon, and I began developing it into a message to somehow or another make some sense out of it for you, seeing as though the whole idea was so comforting to me and brought so much strength of faith and encouragement to me. I wanted it to do the same for you. The Lord speaks to me different than I put it in a message and speak to you, because that's the way it is. But the Lord can tie and link things to your own experience like He does to mine, and let us know that He is still not only in control, but that He makes a distinction between the righteous and the unrighteous. Today I'd like to bring just a little bit of comfort without necessarily taking away from the gravity of our situation. I could very easily, because I am versed in it and because I have a lot of information, be able to tell you clearly just what's happening in our nation, but I believe it would really scare you, and I honestly don't feel that that is what we need right now. It doesn't take away from the fact that it's true, and it doesn't take away from the fact that it's there, and it doesn't take away from the fact that it's going to happen very shortly, and that many of those things I've already prophesied and said, not because I said them will they come to pass, but because the Lord has already been saying this through us and many others. We need to just pay attention but not focus on it. The reason why I'm not going that route this morning is because I don't believe we should focus on some of these things, but neither do I think we should be ignorant and just pretend like none of this is happening, okay? Don't think for a minute that life is going to go on as usual. It's going to be terrible before it's done. Absolutely, horrifically terrible, beyond anything I could describe to you this morning. Many of us are going to be alive during this time. And the only thing we've got is the Lord Jesus. This isn't about religion. This isn't about salvation. This is about the only one that controls all the affairs of people around the world. The ones that not only put us here, but the ones that will control us. Many of you who are making plans for your brilliant future, go ahead and make them, because God will be in you. The only thing that has to change, if anything, is that you grip hold of Christ in a real way and hang out for this ride, because it's going to be a real nasty ride. But those that hang on to Christ and that have Him will be hearing His voice, His instructions. He will be telling you what to do. Some of you will have to move from where you are. Others of you will just have to not go to work a certain day. And if some of you aren't really listening, He may in His grace just force circumstances on you. You may wake up sick one morning and not go to the very place that got bombed out. Or many of the issues that God will use to take care of you, spare you, and keep you during your life. You may lose some jobs along the way. God never promises that everything is going to go good. He promises that we will arrive safely in the end, and that God will spare us through all this thing. So point number one I'd like to make before I get into the scriptures and start reading my passage for this morning is that all this that's happening is geared to and purposed for the wicked. It's geared to and purposed for the wicked. This is not God getting after His people. However, when God does get a hold of the wicked and does punish the wicked because we live among them, it has a tendency of really waking us up and driving us toward the only one we know is our safety and our safekeeping. Did you understand that? God is not intending what's happening now and what's going to happen for you and for me, the Christians, the people that believe in Him, have accepted Him. We are sheltered and kept by Him. However, those of us who have lived too far from Him and have lived hearing God's voice, correcting things, and haven't been paying attention, and we've been living on the peripherals of God's grace, God's going to let some of this stuff slip through and hurt us. And it won't permanently damage you, but it's going to hurt you. It's going to smart really bad. And through this, you're going to learn to live closer to Him, because God is all about relationship. And when we ignore relationship, and when we ignore His holy ways and want to just live the way we want to live and pretend like everything we have because of the strength of our studies and the strength of our diplomas and the strength of our bodies that are strong and healthy, all that can go. Before you're out of this life, all that's going to go. Your life itself is going to go. But I want to tell you that there's hope in all of this, and that the Lord is here to protect His own. God has already studied out this whole scenario. God has put, as it were, a mark on everyone that's His and that's been living for Him and living righteously and giving to Him and doing all the things that are right when we walk with God during the times of prosperity. You remember when we talked about the rush in the tree and the messages that came afterwards, you will understand that God looks at what we do when things are going well. It's those things that will mark you and protect you during the times that everything goes wrong. So God has the answers for the times that go wrong, because God had the answers when everything went right. And remember that right always follows wrong. The times of blessing and seasons of refreshing often follow times of storm and bad weather. So we're going to have some storms and bad weather. God's shaking up the earth. He's not going to allow us to live. We as a nation are supposed to be a Christian nation. We're not living as one. And God's going to shake away all that, all our idols and all our gods and our lust for money and our lust for covetousness of things is one thing that we've been serving hand and foot for many, many a decade. And God is saying that's enough. So He's going to crash the gods. He's going to destroy the idols that we have been worshiping. But let me say this. God is a person that is very prosperous, is very rich. He has nothing against either one. And God loves to bless His children. God gets more of a kick out of seeing you blessed and prospered than He does out of seeing you corrected and punished. God says He takes no pleasure in punishing or in correcting people or in disciplining them. But He does take great pleasure in being able to bless and prosper us. It's that God said in Deuteronomy, if you'll remember very clearly, He said, I will prosper and I will bless you, but beware, beware that when all this comes, that you don't forget me, because I am the one that gave it to you. If you begin to worship what I gave you and not continue to worship and follow and obey me, He said, I will have to remove that so that you remember where it came from. That is why, not as a habit, but every once a month, just to keep us reminded, we wave something before the Lord, just so that we remind ourselves where our income comes from, where our job opportunities come from. And it might not have been that important a year ago, a whole lot more important right now. And believe me, before this year is over, it's going to be a whole lot more important that we depend on God for our job. He is the only one that can keep it. When people are falling all around us by the hundreds, are being gone, He's the only one that can keep you. If He didn't keep your job, He's got lessons there for you. Learn them. It was because during the time of prosperity, you weren't faithful to give Him His part, and God's collecting all of it back. But after a season of correcting you, God will put you back again and pick your feet up, put you on solid ground, and He will again bless your life. God isn't an advocate for poverty, but God is definitely a God who is righteous and wants us living for Him, and He's very jealous. He loves so much. You know, if you ever love somebody, when they turn away from you from that love, it hurts so bad that you have to do something about it. God is a jealous God. That's what the Bible says. God wrote about Himself, and He said, I am a jealous God. So don't provoke me to jealousy. Don't provoke that about me. He said, when I see I don't have your heart anymore and you're falling after other things, that provokes me to jealousy. I'm going to start wanting to do away and slap around whatever is entertaining you, because your heart belongs to me. Now, there's certain things within that realm that God permits. One is a wife or a husband, whichever the case might be. God permits us to love our children. God permits us certain liberties within money. You can make a lot of money and have a lot of money. Just give, be open-hearted, give to the Lord what belongs to Him, and be wise in investing. God isn't against you having all these things. Would to God we were all rich, and we all could bless the kingdom, and we all could do the things we need to do, and all be well instead of struggling for the next food stamp we need to get to eat, all right? So God's into this. He loves, He's big into this. He loves all this. And so just remember that if you haven't been right with God, it may be too late to go back on years of tithes and make them up. But you can at least repent and turn around and say, God, I know why, I'm counted among the others that have lost their job, and I want to start being faithful today. And that might spare you some of your time. It might spare you. It might not. God only puts us through things enough to bring us back to Him. And so just be faithful with the Lord. Be faithful with your time. Be faithful in your prayer. Just be faithful to Him. Be faithful in your love to Him. God will let you have a love of your life. God will let you have a boyfriend. God will let you have a girlfriend. God will let you have a husband, a wife. God will let you have money. God will let you have a lot of things that are all within the parameters of what He accepts. Those things will not provoke Him to jealousy. Those things will not provoke God to do things to correct you. However, if we have sex out of marriage, or if we have children illegitimately, or if we go out there and don't pay our tithe but just live however we want, and if we just live the life of hell and abuse all kinds of substances and everything, we're living outside God. You're going to provoke God to jealousy, and you're going to provoke His anger upon your life, and He's going to swat you. And when you're swatted, the best thing you could do, and please hear this from me, if you ever see yourself swatted by God, do like He taught me to do several times in my life when I've been swatted and corrected by God. Submit. Surrender, submit, and humble yourself. Don't you dare get cocky. Don't you dare lift up your head, because that's the serpent's nature. You provoke a serpent, the first thing it's going to do is raise his head. But you provoke a Christian, the first thing they're going to do, all right, Lord, I'm sorry. They're going to repent, they're going to humble themselves, and they're going to come down to his feet, and they're going to say, God, I can't make up for lost time, but I can come back to you and let whatever happens, happens. You're just, you're merciful, and do whatever you need to do with my life, but I belong to you, and I'm coming back to you. And God says that although he can be in the midst of his fiercest mood of anger, he said, I'll shut it off like a faucet right in the middle if I find a repentant heart who will buckle down, who will accept my discipline, who will submit to me and say, I'm sorry, Lord, I had it coming. Whatever happens, happens. Be my King and my Lord. And it says he will turn just as instantly as he was full of anger toward you. He will turn in mercy, and he will have mercy upon you. And he might cut your sentence short by 50% or by 80% or by 90%. I've never seen God cut it out by 100%, because he still needs to smart us enough to remember for next time. But God does, in his mercy, cut short those times of discipline in our life. And what I've also seen him do is, let's just say this economical thing, which we've all fallen after and worship. We're the most spend-worthy nation in the face of the earth for all kinds of junk that we have to have sales for, and I'm included in this, that there's so much stuff we don't need and never have needed, and it just seemed like we have to, they put such pressure on you to buy this, to buy this, to buy this, and you go through a store and you find yourself buying something you never went to look for anyway. We have worshiped this God, and God's going to get rid of it. Some people are going to hurt a little bit financially, others are going to hurt a whole lot more, others are going to lose everything you've had, but through this all, God is there for you. God is your God in difficulties, and he's your God in positive moments. Don't ever fear. Even if you're losing it all, God's purpose isn't to destroy you. God's purpose isn't to ruin you. God's purpose is to learn a lesson. So when things start happening, the best thing we could do, if you find yourself in the hospital with an accident, the first thing you can do when you're cognizant is look up toward the ceiling, even if you can't move very much, and say, all right, Lord, why am I here? I'm listening. If you find yourself with your house on the auction block, look up toward heaven and say, all right, Lord, I'm listening. What are you saying? When you find your job is on the line and other people that were friends of yours are still working in the same company, but you were the one that got laid off with a bunch of others, look up toward heaven and say, all right, Lord, I'm listening. What are you trying to tell me? Because God is the one that controls the lives of all Christians. And what I say to you today has a lot more meaning than if I'd said it a year ago, although I have said it a year ago. But believe me that before this year or so or next or over, it's going to have a whole lot more meaning. You may be even ordering the tape. But God has hope even when things go wrong. I'd like us to turn to Genesis chapter 7. I'd like to glean something out of this, and I'm going to speak to you this morning out of Genesis 7 from the Amplified Translation, just for the means of simplicity and amplitude, and the rest of you can follow in whatever scriptures you have. And it says here in the very first verse of that chapter, the Lord spoke to Noah. Say that with me. The Lord spoke to Noah. That means that when things are about to happen, God talks. God spoke to Noah to prepare an ark, which was a means of salvation for him and his family and whoever would board. Everybody made fun of him. They thought he was crazy. It's just like me 3 or 4 years ago prophesying all these things, and we thought it was a little bit off the end, the deep end. As we get closer and the rains start coming, we begin to think, well, maybe we should have had an ark. And then when it's pouring down rain and it's flooding and our house is floating down the river, we're wondering, you know, maybe I should have done something then. Maybe I should do it now. But I'd just like to go on record to tell you that God was speaking long before the rains came. And God was speaking to these unrighteous people through Noah, although he preached at them again and again. They thought he was just legalistic and crazy and religious. But God spoke to him. God spoke to Noah even at the last minute when the rains were about to come. And this is the beauty of it. God had already provided himself with an ark. I would just like to say that an ark represents the means that God uses to save you. But I'd also like to say that the ark actually represents Jesus. He is our place of safety. He is our hiding place. He is the one we come to in prayer and devotions and nearness. We know how to get near to God. And if you don't, then come and ask and we'll show you the way. Jesus is the way unto God. And so he is our hiding and safety place. So we're going to look at a little story in the Old Testament. We're going to try to drive some truths for our day today. And we're going to go through the same economic storm that they went through and the destruction of all things. During Noah's day, God spoke to him. And I found something very beautiful. It was the words the Lord used to bring great comfort and to bring faith again into my heart through this situation. Not only did the Lord speak to Noah, but he gave him instructions. He said the following. He said, "Come with your household into the ark, for I have seen you to be righteous, that is upright and in right standing before me in this generation." Those are the words that God spoke to Noah. I know you wouldn't believe this, but I'm a big sticker for small words, because not only the small words, but for every word. I believe that God doesn't mince words, but I believe he doesn't waste them either. I believe that the Lord means everything he says and says exactly everything he means. The word that meant a lot to me was the word come. And maybe some of you don't understand why, but the moment I read those words, I began crying and weeping. And I said, "Lord, you know, you don't only have a place of safety, but you're there in it with us." Because if the Lord had said, "Go into the ark and I'm going to shut it up and, have a safe ride, bye," that would have been one thing. But he said, "No, I'm going to go through this with you. I'm going to go through this terrible storm with you." Now, maybe many of you don't have the ability to use your imagination, but I'm a person that finds it very easy to imagine a situation and put myself into a place and see all the things that happen. I think many of us think of an ark that just began to rise on the water and just stayed there and just bobbed up and down, and they just fished off the, because they had to eat something. They just fished off of the deck and just had a great time, sunshine and rain, just had fun. It's just like a cruise. Many people do that, just a cruise on a vacation for a week or a month on the ocean and just have fun. Honey, it wasn't anything like that. It said that thing creaked. It just swayed one way and swayed the other, and you banged up against one wall and banged up another, and suddenly a huge wave would come in as water flooded over the top of a mountain and caved in over the other side of it and would crash into this thing and bounce up and down, and this thing would be sideways up and down. The bow of it would be up in the air looking at heaven. The next thing you know, it's looking down into hell, and this thing was just going every which way. Now, I know that many of you may not have ever had an opportunity to be on a boat, but let me tell you, unless you take Dramamine, you're going to find out what a riot is all about. And if you're out there on ships like I have been on a storm, when the waves are 15 or 20 feet high and the bow of your boat looks up into heaven, then suddenly it's like being on a roller coaster continuously. Dramamine or no Dramamine, you're going to be helping add to the ocean's volume. Honey, that wasn't a joyride that they had that day. as I would allow my imagination to go forward, God's means of protection wasn't a Cadillac ride down a 70-mile-an-hour smooth highway in America. That sucker was tossed to and fro, up and down. People were sick. It was horrible smelling of animals. I mean, we're talking about living inside of a zoo. We're not talking about having the zoo next door. That thing was horrific. You talk about work. There was a lot of work. If any of you have ever farmed like I have, and you have to clean out stalls, chicken pens, and clean out pig pens, God in heaven, that is awful work. When you first get started, you do it with your hands pinching your nose and the other hand forking away whatever. And then when you're done with the day, you thank God that it's over with. But these animals will put it back down for you next day. And this is just an everyday job. Well, honey, when you have all the animals of the world on board with you, just let your imagination go for a minute. Do you think these guys had a joyride and they were on vacation? Honey, they were working. And they were working in some of the worst conditions that there were. Just to what? To save America. Just to save quails. Just to save the owls. Just to save, you know, all those kind of things. Well, we could let our imagination quit there, but I just wanted to show you that even if God saves us, He's not going to save you in such a smooth way that you're going to say, hey, man, you know what? The rest of the world was having a crisis. I mean, they were just wasting away in all these terrible things. But man, did we ever have a joyride? That was a vacation. Let's have an economic collapse again. Yeehaw! It's not going to happen that way. I can promise you it's not going to happen that way. God's going to bless you. He's going to keep you. Your life is going to be spared for you. But you're going to be wondering by the end of the ride whether it was worth being spared. Because this sucker is a rough ride, okay? Okay, let your imagination go just a little while. After a hard day's work and all of the smell, and having to feed him, and know that the more you feed him, the more it comes out, and the more work you're making for yourself. Then when you're at the end of the day, you're exhausted. You go to your bed of hay, because you don't have no Tempur-Pedic. And you just crash on your bed of hay. And just about the time you're ready to give up the ghost and sleep all night, this wonderful thought comes to your mind. We've got dozens of predators on board. Man-eating ones. Lions, leopards, tigers, cheetahs, name them. They love to feed at night. And they love fresh meat. They don't like to fight for it any more than they have to, so if it comes easy, that's better. As you've got a few members of your family already snoring in the background. Hey, wake up, everybody. Who's going to keep watch tonight? One of us doesn't get to sleep. Now, if that was just a day or two, that'd be all right. But when it goes on for week after week after week, that's not good news. God is going to spare us. God is going to keep us. But the ride is not going to be easy. And the Lord wants us to know that when we have Him working for us, we're going to make it. Now, that's a good thing because there's going to be a lot of people that won't. We're going to make it not only here in America. We're not only going to make it in our life. We're not only going to make it when we die. We're going to make it eternally because God is with us and He's protecting us. And what I wanted to say to us is that the words of God was that I am with you in this. I am going to be with you. I'm not leaving. You are coming into me. He said, come. Come means that He was already in the ark. Come means that He'd already worked to provide the very thing that they needed. That means that while you weren't even thinking about it, and before we ever had a crisis, God was working on the answer for you. He had the place in the other part of the state where you were to move in. He had the answer of the job that you were to move to when you got cast out of this one. He had already worked on all the circumstances, and now He just says, come. Come, trust me on this one. Trust me on this one. Come, keep really close to me. Come to where I am, but I'm going to go through this with you. You're not going through it alone. And so God is a very personal God. And this is what the Lord is really saying to us, come, come. He's not pushing us away. It doesn't matter what state you're in. It doesn't matter what condition you're in. Although God said this to Noah, I am sure Noah had said this to hundreds and thousands of people. Listen, folks, come in. God said to the animals, come, and they came. God said to Noah, come. And so Noah came into the ark with his family, and all the animals came into the ark, and then it says that God shut the door. I remember an instance in Matthew 25. Do you remember the 10 virgins? 5 were wise and 5 were not wise. Do you remember that? And during that time, it says that at a certain given time, the Lord says, come. And there were some that were awake and that were waiting and that were in Christ, and they were in a relationship with him where they were in an awakened state. They weren't in a stupor. They weren't sleeping. They weren't living for the world. And they were awakened to God. And he said, come. And when he said, come, they went. And when they went into Christ, he shut the door. He said there were those that were waiting for their husband. When their husband came at midnight, they went through the door, and then the door was what? Shut. And just like it was in the days of Noah, when all the people came banging on the door, God had shut it already. The same door that shut some people in shut other people out. And that's what happened with the 10 virgins. 5 were on one side of the door when it was shut, and the other 5 were on the other side of the door, banging and banging and banging, wondering if he would let him in. And he said, it's too late. The door is shut. The call of the Lord for us is to live close to him, to live real, not just to come religiously, sing him a song, do our duty, and leave. He's talking about us living in reality, in a place where our ears are attentive to his word. And a lot of times God speaks to us through the Bible. He quickens things that he's already written. But many of us don't take the time to even read the Bible. We're too busy. I guess what I'm trying to say is that some of us better be more alert, because we're going to start hearing this voice come, wherever that come is. And I'm not trying to be religious, but for each one of us, it's going to be something different. In Argentina, they've had several economical crises where the whole country collapses, and where we've been into triple-digit inflation and all kinds of crazy things. But the end of 2001, just after my dad passed away, the whole entire system collapsed. But before it did, the banks seized the money of everybody. Anybody who had money in the bank, they seized it. It's one of those things where people went broke from one day to another. Multinational companies that had millions in their accounts lost it from one day to another. The government had to survive. And in this land of survival, it was either you or me. Did you know that there's already people high up in government and high up in the knowledge of all the affairs of the United States that last night on the news said that the banks are getting ready in America to do exactly that to its citizens, and it's going to happen fast and suddenly? And they use this example. It's going to be as it was in Argentina, 2001. I was there when it happened. God has spoken to us to take everything out just before we did. I have a friend of mine that's a pastor of a church. He's called Beto Pagano. He and his wife have a factory. They have a sweater factory, and they make good money. They always have made good money. In fact, he was the one that helped me build a church that John took over in Buenos Aires and helped finance part of the building and whatever. But all to say this, that 3 or 4 days before this happened, and nobody knew it was going to happen, at least here in the States, some of them are warning people that it might happen, but in Argentina, we didn't even get a warning. But the Lord had spoken to us, and we were already prepared. We had nothing in the bank, but he spoke in a dream to Beto Pagano's wife, Pochi, and he told her, pull all you have out of the bank. Now, we're talking about several hundred thousand dollars, almost $1 million. Pull it out of the bank and put it in Uruguay. She got up the next morning. She told her husband, we got to pull all our money out of the bank. Well, what are we going to do with it? We're going to open an account in Uruguay. Let's go over to Uruguay, open an account, transfer it all. She transferred it all, and 2 days after it was totally transferred, they locked down the country of Argentina, and everybody lost the money But they did not lose any of their money. 8 months later, the Lord spoke to Pochi again as she was reading her Bible one morning. The Spirit came near to her and said again to her, pull your money out of Uruguay and bring it back to Argentina immediately. She phone called the bank, had them transfer the money to their account in Argentina, and 24 hours later, Uruguay did the same thing Argentina had done. Jesus is the ark. But we have got to be in a state of alertness. Noah heard the Lord speak to him and say, get into the ark. God's not promising us that we're not going to go through all kinds of trouble. But the righteous, he is sparing and keeping. God is sparing the righteous. God is keeping the righteous. God is working things out to where we can be secure and safe. Now, I could tell you a lot of stories like this that have happened in my lifetime, but we really don't have time because I see time's getting away from us. But it would help you to know some of these things and to realize that God cares about our economy. God cares about your life. He cares about your job. But if we're just going to follow God afar off and come to church once in a long while and just live the lifestyle we want to live, freedom, and we're totally rebellious, and at the smallest rebuke of God, we're not listening, honey, at the rebuke of God, you need to fall on your knees and say, Lord, I'm listening. Submit. Submit to the hand of the Lord. Submit to His discipline. Let there be something in your heart that says, God, I'm letting you deal with me. And Psalm 27, verse 4, and I'm moving right along here. One thing have I asked of the Lord, and that will I inquire of necessity. And in verse 5, it says, for in the day of trouble, he will hide me in his shelter. You see, David made God his hiding place. David made God and the house of the Lord his precious place of being, where he could gaze upon his beauty, his sweet attractiveness, delightful loveliness, and he meditated in his word. In other words, he lived with God and followed God. It wasn't just a religion, it was real for him. And so then he says, for in the day, in verse 5, for in the day of trouble he will hide me in his shelter. Now that's the ark. And in the secret place of his tent he will hide me. He will set me high upon the rock. And in Psalms 33:18, behold, the Lord's eyes are upon those who fear him, who reverence and worship him with truthful awe, and those who wait for him in hope and his mercy and loving kindness. What does he do to those kind of people? It says to deliver them from death and to keep them alive in times of famine. So God is here telling us that there's nothing to fear if you're really living close to God. And you know, sometimes I wish we could just be on television and radio and tell the entire world this so that they can be prepared. Because God is after the wicked, not the righteous. But let me tell you something. There's going to be a lot of righteous people that aren't living right with God right now. They're going to run head into this, and they're not going to be inside the ark when the door shuts. They're going to be on the outside when calamity starts. They're going to lose their homes. They're going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose their food. They're going to be out there begging for food. And not only that, but there's going to be tremendous pressure and crisis to bear. Many families are going to dissolve over it. Many children are going to be left without their parents. There's going to be many deaths, many suicides. There is going to be all types of things happening. And I could tell you a lot more. That my purpose isn't to scare you. My purpose is just to make it real. Let me read out of Isaiah 26:20. The voice of the Lord is really saying, come, my people, and enter into your chambers. Notice the word come. The Lord was in the chamber already. The Lord was in the ark already. He is saying, come. The word of the Lord to us is come. Come near to me. Come to me. Come into me. Follow me closely. Read my word. Be there all the time. Be faithful. Come on in. The time that's coming is going to force you to do that anyway, so you might as well start doing it now and not have to take some serious stuff that's coming. It says, and shut your doors about you and hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpassed. What the Lord is really saying here in just common English is, I want you to come and hide yourself in me, because my wrath and indignation is about to be poured out really heavy upon this country, and I want to protect you from it. So hide yourself in your closet of prayer and communion with me. Come and be with me. Let's weather this storm out. And it might not be an easy ride, but God's going to keep us during that time. And there's a lot more I could tell you. God is going to be there for us. So a word to the wise is sufficient. You will find out. Have an ear. Turn to the Lord. This isn't a time to live like nothing's going to happen, because there's a storm brewing that's going to be worse than you think. And this storm will have a good part to it. There's going to be a season that God's going to give us. I'm still believing, although everybody's saying it's going to happen this year, I'm still believing in my heart that God will give us more time, that He'll give us at least another year or two. I'm hoping the stimulus package will work. I'm hoping things will work a little bit before the whole thing crashes. And who knows, if Christians all around the United States and world would turn to God with all their heart, we may even avert all of it. I'm afraid it's all gone too far, and we're going to have a rough ride ahead of us. Be in the ark, because it's rougher out of it. It was a rough ride in it, but the other guys were not around to tell the story. Did you know that God wiped the entire earth clean of human beings, and the only ones alive were Noah and his family? I'm glad that God's wrath isn't at that peak right now. But before this world is over, God says 2/3 of the earth will be destroyed by fire. And there'll be so many dead that they won't even bury them. Animals and fowls will eat the flesh of human beings. We're getting close to Noah's days again. But that isn't what we're looking at right now. That isn't what we're going through. God is just calling America to Himself, and we're going to get slapped by the hand of the Almighty. And I think all of us are going to see how big His hand really is before we're through. Make sure that as He's slapping our nation with His left huge hand, that He holds the constellations in, that He's got His right hand of salvation out for you, that you can take Him by the hand and say, God, keep me during this hour. It's a good thing to live, so don't give up hope. God is here with you. Amen.